So actually, Tesla's management has improved because Elon Musk has put in place a capable management team. But then that has a downside. If he's not giving it his full attention, what happens next? Obviously, everyone will be aware of the huge package that he recently... But if you look at the hurdles he has to pass, if he hits those hurdles, then he can have his huge pay package. But that's not because we don't like the firm. It's because we no longer see it as one of our best ideas in terms of upside from here. Car sales have slowed, actually reversed in some places, and I think that partly has to do with the politics of it. Now, I think that will come back. I think Tesla will do, their car business will continue to grow in the long term, but it's kind of in the price there. So that's become a challenge. To believe Tesla has very significant upside from here, you have to believe in the autonomous driving bit and the solar power business and possibly the robotics business.
Hello, 이효석입니다. 자, 오늘은 특별한 두 분을 모셨는데요. 신영자산운용의 정지광 부장님 그리고 베일리 기포드의 스튜어트 던바님 모셨습니다. 안녕하세요.
안녕하세요.
네, 먼저 개인 소개부터 좀 부탁드리겠습니다. 네.
저는 신영자산운용에서 리테일 마케팅을 담당하고 있는 정지광 부장입니다. 그리고 한 가지 또 재밌는 거는 베일리 기포드가 저희 이제 신영자산운용하고 2023년 9월에 이제 상품을 출시하게 됐었는데 네네. 그 당시에 저희가 이제 벨리포드랑 뭐 수년간 교류를 통해서 굉장히 이제 서로의 신뢰를 쌓고 그리고 또 하나는 제가 사실 이렇게 오늘 이 자리를 통해서 대표님께 말씀드린 이유가 벨리포드가 되게 재밌고 배울 게 많은 운영사예요. 네. 네, 그런 부분들을 또 구독자님들이 같이 공유를 했으면 좋지 않을까. 네. 네, 그런 부분이 있습니다.
알겠습니다. 그리고 it's your turn.
Okay.
Introduce yourself.
Myself? Oh, okay. So my name is Stuart Dunbar. I'm a partner in Baillie Gifford. Baillie Gifford is a 117-year-old investment partnership based mainly in Edinburgh. In the UK, we run around $300 billion and we have offices in 10 different places, but mostly in Edinburgh and New York.
저도 에딘버러에 이번 가을에 한번 갔었거든요. 너무 아름다운 도시더라고요. Beautiful city. 이제 네. 제가 오늘 뭐 어떤 질문부터 드려야 될까 싶은 생각이 드는데 이게 에딘버러라는 곳에 있는 베일리 기포드라는 회사. 이 회사는 뭐 제가 알기로 좀 되게 독특한 회사인 것 같아요. 어떻게 소개를 먼저 해주신다면?
베일리 기포드는 뭐 더 소개를 자세히 해주시겠지만 일단 제일 재밌는 거는 다들 아시겠지만 뭐 런던, 뉴욕, 홍콩 이런 금융 도시에 보통 이렇게 뭐 굉장히 저명한 뭐 금융 회사들이 있죠. 근데 에딘버러는 저희가 굉장히 흥미로웠던 거는 117년 동안 계속 에딘버러에서 성장을 해온 운용사예요. 그리고 그렇게 운용사 비즈니스 한 가지만을 계속 그 지속적으로 해왔고요. 그 중에 하나가 이제 저희 신영자산운용이 가지고 있지 않은 성장주 투자 관련된 부분인데 네, 그 부분을 사실 지난 뭐 100년 넘게 이렇게 계속 지속적으로 똑같은 이제 기준을 가지고 해올 수 있었던 이유가 방금 덤바님께서도 말씀 주셨지만 외부 주주가 없이 네, 내부 이제 파트너로 지금 덤바님도 파트너 중에 한 분이신데 전 세계 59명에 해당되는 파트너분들이 계셔서 그분들이 내부 그 이제 지분을 다 가지고 있는 소유하고 있는 그래서 이제 비즈니스를 이제 계속 그 이제 디벨롭을 할 때 사실 뭐 외부 주주의 요구 사항에 뭐 흔들리거나 네, 단기적인 이익 때문에 뭐 다른 이제 또 다른 그 뭐 경영 지침을 하거나 그런 부분들이 발생을 하질 않습니다. 그래서 어찌 보면 뭐 지난 뭐 100년 이상 굉장히 이제 추구를 했었던 성장주 투자를 잘 이제 닦아오고 개선을 시켜올 수 있었던 이유라고 보실 수 있죠.
네. 이거는 이제 질문을 드리고 싶은데 파트너 중에 한 명이라고 얘기를 해주셨고 근데 그 파트너가 59명밖에 없기 때문에 이게 자산 운용으로서 그 한 길을 팔 수 있었다라고 얘기해 주셨는데 한 그 중에 한 분이라고 들었어요.
맞아요.
얼마나 부자이신지 첫 번째 그리고 어떤 자격이 필요한 건지 그리고 이제 파트너들끼리 공통점이 무엇인지 이 세 가지를 좀 여쭙고 싶어요.
Okay, we'll do it in reverse order. So criteria, there are no fixed criteria, but it's all about contribution to the firm and working well with colleagues and leading by example and working hard for a long period of time and maybe gaining some clients or looking after some clients. So it's all about contributing, but we're very much about joint contribution. I think that's the best way to run a partnership. In terms of how the partnership works, We all have different shares. Our managing partners can decide what our shares are. The stakes in the company change hands at book value. That means that it's easy for ownership stakes to share. We don't have to get into arguments about the value of the company. We just change hands at book value, but we have different profit shares. I won't tell you how rich I am, but I will tell you we've been fortunate to have a successful company for many years. It takes a long time.
Long time.
Because when you join, when you become a partner in the firm, it's a while before your stake builds up and your profit takes a long time to start to come through. You have to borrow money. Almost everyone has to borrow money because even although we use book value, that's still a lot of money. Our regulator makes us hold lots of money in the firm. So usually you have to borrow and then you work and then slowly your profits come and then you pay off your debts. And then after maybe 12 or 14 years or something, then after that, then if all is well at that point, then finally I start to have some money.
그래서 하나 특징이 방금 말씀하신 부분 중에서는 뭐 굉장히 험블하게 말씀 주시긴 했는데 벨리포드의 어떤 직원이든 다 파트너가 될 수 있는 자격은 그래서 컨트리뷰션에 있다고 보시면 될 것 같아요. 그리고 그 한 가지 또 특징이 그 이제 무한 책임이라는 부분이 있습니다. 그래서 파트너분 예. 그 결국은 내부 주주시기 때문에 회사에 어떤 일이 있을 때 무한 책임을 져야 되는 부분이 있고 그런 그 지분을 이제 받을 때 그 금액이 크지 않기 굉장히 작지 않기 때문에 처음 진입할 때는 방금 말씀 주신 게 사실은 뭐 이제 돈을 빌려서 대출을 통해서 그 정도 규모의 이제 지분을 태우게 돼요. 그래서 지금 이제 덤바님은 좀 이제 연배가 되셨기 때문에 이제는 그 모든 시기를 거쳐서 이제 좀 이익이 나고 있는.
네. I think it's important to say. So we have been for 117 years, we have done no acquisitions. We've never sold any part of the business. So although I am a partner and others are, I don't think of it. It's not really mine. I'm looking after it for the next generation of people. My job is to make sure the company is successful for its clients and then for the staff and then for the partners and hand it on in good shape for those that come behind me. And I think it's important to think of it that way. So we will never sell the business to anyone. We are clear about that. So my job is to make sure that I hand it over in good shape to the next partners.
제가 알기로 스코틀랜드의 그 영화 중에서 브레이브하트라는 영화 있잖아요. 혹시 Braveheart. Do you know Braveheart? Mel Gibson, you know?
Yes.
그 영화에 보면은 마지막 장면에서 멜 깁슨이 프리덤이라고 외치면서 이제 죽는 장면이 나와요. 그러니까 그 얘기는 멜 깁슨이 죽음을 무릅쓰고라도 지키고 싶은 가치가 있었기 때문이었다고 저는 생각하는데.
Yeah, okay, that's very interesting.
그런 거에 비춰서 생각해 보면 벨리 기포드에 있는 많은 파트너들은 어떤 이유 때문에 그 가치를 지키고 싶어 하는지 내가 그 가치를 훼손시키고 싶지 않다는 것 때문에 하는 거잖아요. 그러니까 뭐 때문에 그런 가치를 지키고 싶어 하는지.
Yeah, so that's a really interesting way of thinking about it. So Mel Gibson represented a guy called William Wallace who stuck by his principles no matter what. Fairness and
freedom.
Fair treatment, freedom. I should be very clear at this point. I'm not anti-English. but it's really, because there is a similarity, which is our belief is that investing is not what most people do now. Stock markets have become an obsession. They're way more important than they should be. Stock markets are not that important. Our belief is that investing is about real world capital deployment into companies. It's working with companies. It's the real world, it's not the financial world. And most people don't think that way. So now we live in a world of benchmarks and tracking errors and short-termism and trading. Our belief, our fundamental belief is none of that matters very much. The whole point of investing is what are companies doing to create new products or new technologies? How are they distributing that? How are they training their people? What are they spending R&D? It's like if stock markets didn't exist, we would still think about investing in the same way. The markets are just a way for us to access into all of that activity. And that's hard to do because that's not how most people think now.
에딘버그하고 비슷하게 느껴지는 게 미국의 오마하가 아닌가 싶은데요. 그러니까 워렌 버핏이 오마하에 있는 것처럼 오마하에 저도 가봤는데 비슷한 느낌이에요.
Some people often we are compared. I would never compare myself or my colleagues to Warren Buffett. There's only one Warren Buffett. But yes, it's very similar. Is buy we buy slightly more higher growth companies. We would buy a company before Warren would buy it. But the principle is the same. Is that we look at how the business itself is earning, how it's compounding, what's its book value doing. He thinks of book value and how that's growing. We're earlier stage, we focus more on how revenues are growing and how where profitability might get to. But it's the same in the sense that it's not about whatever the share price is today, doesn't really matter. That's just the result of buyers and sellers. And when there's more buyers, the price goes up. And when there's more sellers, the price goes down. It doesn't matter. And I don't think we should pay attention to that. And volatility in a share price, that's not risk. Risk is you make a bad investment. So in that respect, I think we're very similar. He would always wait. He prefers to invest in companies that already have solid cash flows. We are more willing to invest in companies in earlier stages where the cash flows are not yet large. But that's because we're looking for more outsized winners, but we will take more risk on individual companies to get there than he would take.
And about the place, Edinburgh and Omaha.
Oh, right. So I have mixed feelings on this. So the thing to say is it's better to not be in a big city. But I don't actually think that's because of information. I think you can get information anywhere. That doesn't make any difference now. But where it does make a difference is the kind of people that you can attract to work for you and the way that they think about investing and they think about their own career is all aligned. It's long-term. The people need to be long-term to invest long-term. The firm needs to be long-term so we don't have any outside shareholders. What a luxury that is. It's more likely, in my opinion, that you will find the right kind of people outside of the big financial centres. So that, I think, is a huge advantage. But it's not, you know, the noise of being in a financial centre. You can choose to ignore that. The people point is more important.
사람들은 워렌 버핏을 밸류 인베스터라고 말을 하고 밸류 기포드는 그로스 인베스터라고 이야기하는데 what is the difference between them?
Yeah, so the common thing is the time horizon.
Time horizon.
That's simply the most important thing. I think there is room for value investors and for growth investors, but they can have in common, and this is like we have with Shin Young, is we both think about investments as a very long horizon thing. I think value investing is really difficult because you have to identify when a company is undervalued, so you've got to buy it at the right time and sell it at the right time.
Yeah.
I think growth investing is easier. You've just got to buy it at the right time. yeah, but I think, you know, so it's we don't do market timing. For me, even in the long run, value investing suggests a degree of market timing. You're buying when there's a difference between two price points. When we buy growing companies, we don't have a price target. We just think these are very exciting companies that will grow much more than the market thinks they will for a longer period of time than the market thinks we will. We don't know where it might go, but we know when we invest that we want to hold this company for 5 or 10 or even 15 years, and we will keep it unless our investment thesis is not working. So I think that's the difference is when you buy and the period of time you intend to hold for. I think value managers typically will have a higher turnover than we will have. But in both cases, it's not about trading markets based on whatever information happened today. Because I think that just consistently destroys value for investors. You cannot anticipate what other investors are going to do. You never know what other investors are going to do. Maybe you do, we don't. So we don't try to do that. It's all about much longer progress of, you know, real progress in companies.
한 가지 말씀하신 부분 중에 이제 워렌 버핏이 가치 투자자니까 가치 투자라는 거는 아무래도 이제 그 내재 가치라는 거를 평가를 해서 이제 시장의 가격이 수렴이 되고 안 되고를 따져서 결국에는 지금 덤바님은 그렇기 때문에 이제 그 가격이 이제 언더밸류 됐거나 오버밸류 되면 그래서 어찌 보면 조금은 그 이제 타겟 프라이스가 있다 존재를 한다라는 부분이 밸류 쪽에 있는 거고 지금 벨리 기포드는 성장 이제 투자 전략을 가지고 있는데 벨리 기포드의 특징은 그래서 그 성장하고 있는 기업에 우상향하는 그 가격은 사실 모른다는 거예요. 그래서 가지고 있는 투자 케이스에 그 이론이 훼손되지 않는 이상 그래서 계속 리서치를 통해서 뭐 기업 탐방도 하고 또다시 체크업도 하고 할 텐데 했을 때 사실은 뭐 그 가격의 문제가 아니라 그 매니지먼트, 그 뭐 경쟁력, 예, 시장 점유율, 뭐가 됐던지 간에 그런 부분들이 훼손되지 않으면 사실은 뭐 그래서 아마 아마존도 뭐 20년 넘게 지금 보유하고 있었고 이런 부분들이 있는데 그렇게 가능하지 않나. 그래서 본인이 생각하시는 거는 가치 투자보다는 가치를 측정하는 이 가치 투자보다는 성장 투자가 좀 더 재밌고 쉽다 이렇게 말씀을 하시네요.
저도 I agree with you. Yeah, I'm very momentum and growth investor. 그래서 growth investor를 할 때 많은 어려움이 있을 거라고 생각되는데 제가 고민하는 가장 큰 어려움들은 그러니까 소음과 시그널을 구분하는 거 이건 거는 뭐 다들 아는 거고. 세상의 모든 건 끝이 있기 때문 아닐까 싶어요. 이 부분이 되게 중요하지 않나. 언제 팔아야 되나. 그 영원한 회사는 없잖아요.
First of all, when we buy a company, we don't do it in anticipation of it just being a little bit better than average. We only buy companies when they think they can, minimum case, they can double in 3 years. Usually we want 5 times or 10 times in 10 years. So we try for a big margin of error. In that sense. And then, of course, they grow. And if successful, sometimes they're not, but if they're successful, we have to think about valuation. But we think about that not in terms of a specific number, but we assess, is our view still differentiated from the market's view? So we listen to what markets are saying and other investors are saying, and we read, and if they're talking about the same things that we're talking about, then we can assume that we have less of an edge than we did have. Usually in those circumstances, the upside will be less. It's rare that a company goes from being good to bad, but it typically just means we see the upside potential is less, so now we will start to recycle capital into earlier stage names. So we don't hold forever. We do sell. Even sometimes we sell if a price goes up very quickly. So for example, recently we invested in Cloudflare, and I think it's gone up 9 times in 2 years or something. So actually we have started to take money back out of it. But that reflects that the market has come round to our view. We don't think it's a bad company, but we think, okay, is it going to go up another 10 times from here? Not so likely. So we'll at least have a much smaller holding, and we'll put that in some different companies that we think the market has not yet recognised. So turnover is about 15% per annum. It's not zero. It can't be zero. But when we buy companies, it is with the intention that if the market never catches up with our view, we'll never need to sell it. And the market doesn't catch up very quickly. The market is very short term. I think what's really important is what the price has done historically just doesn't matter. So never be afraid to hold and never be afraid to sell. So I'll give you 2 examples. So Moderna is a company that we invested significantly in, and it had a big spike during COVID, but it's actually been a terrible investment. So we look at that and we say we've lost 70% of our money, maybe. The question is, do we think it's going to go back or do we think it's not working? And in this case, we look at it and we think, no, the fundamental investment case is broken. They didn't execute well on drug rollout. So you have to be not afraid to move on. Equally, though, sometimes a stock might have doubled or tripled, but it's cheaper because the fundamental progress has actually been faster than the progress of the share price. So the secret there is what the share price has done doesn't matter. It's what's it going to do? The question is always, starting today on a 5-year view, what are our expectations of this company? And then that leads us to not get stuck. The danger if you're a growth investor is your bad investments become value investments and your good investments become married to them and you can't change them. So we have to guard in both ways.
워렌 버핏도 그렇고 뭐 벨리 기포드도 그렇고 공통점은 장기를 본다는 건데 숏텀. 어떻게 하면 장기를 볼 수 있는 건지 이 어려운 그 AI 시대에 어떻게 하면 장기적으로 보기 위해서 뭐가 필요한 건지 우리는 모두 에딘버러에 살 수가 없거든요. 네.
Very difficult.
Lots of people say they're long term. Very few people truly are long term. So there's multiple things. The ingredients. One is alignment. So do we organize our own firm in such a way that we can be long term? What I mean by that is we don't have any profit targets in our own firm. We don't have any growth targets. We invest almost entirely in equities. So that means this happens. That means our revenues are volatile. It is no good to you, my client. Markets go down and we sack half of our investment managers or researchers. So we organize our business in such a way that we just take all that volatility. Good years, bad years, doesn't matter. We have to be stable. So that's the number one thing. That's when not having shareholders is a huge advantage. The next thing is, do we explain to our clients what they should expect before they become clients? So, of course, we want lots of clients. We are a business. But we try to be very clear that if you have a short horizon and you're worried about drawdowns, either at portfolio level or stock level, then you're going to worry about things that we don't worry about, and that's not going to make for a good relationship. So you have to try and have clients who allow you to be long-term. So we talk about having good clients, and I'm not saying that just because we want to be nice. It really matters. If you don't have good clients, you can't be long-term. You have to get your incentives right at the companies you everywhere. The management of the companies you invest in, the incentives of the investment managers in your investment firm, the incentives that you're responding to that your clients have. All of that has to line up, otherwise you can't be long-term. And that's where it normally falls down. So if you look at companies, very often management is on short-term incentive schemes. So they forgo positive investments in order to maximise this year's profits, so they get payouts and their options. And they know that the market is short-term, so the market doesn't like it when companies make long-term investments. So that's where it falls down. In investment management companies, sometimes people are rewarded for wrong behaviours, asset raising or one-year performance or whatever. That's not aligned. And then within the asset owners themselves, I can tell you how many times I speak to prospective clients and we have a lovely conversation like this one. And at the end they say, I really believe, but I'm not going to work with you because I can't work with you because I'm measured on a one-year or three-year horizon. So very often, it's amazing how often individuals, I speak to an individual at an institution and they don't invest for their institution, but they do invest personally. Now, doesn't that tell you there's a problem with alignment? So that's where it becomes so difficult to be long-term. I think something that's very important is the management of the company's part of this. You can't invest this way if you own a lot of companies. There are not that many companies in which management really executes well, and they are disproportionately founder-controlled. So one of the things which is contrary to received wisdom, corporate governance says one shareholder, one vote. Much of the time we favour companies that don't have that. We like companies where a great founder or inspirational individual still controls the company, because they're likely to continue to act long-term, and there really are not very many companies like that. So for us, this only works because we invest in a small number of companies that we truly like, and we don't care about benchmark weights and benchmark positions. If you think that way, you have to invest in companies that you don't believe in. And for us, that doesn't work. And I also think that's why active management often doesn't work, because you're not truly doing it with conviction.
벨리포드가 하나 또 유명한 부분이 사실 조금은 뭐 벨리포드가 외부에서 뭐 헤지펀드라고 불리기도 하고 뭐 벤처 캐피탈이라고 불리기도 하고 뭐 사모펀드라고 불리는 이유가 상장 전에 상장 전부터 리서치를 많이 하고 사실 비상장 운용도 많이 하고 있고 이런 부분이 있어요. 근데 그 부분을 방금 말씀하신 것 중에 하나가 기업의 창립자가 설립자가 계속 끌고 가는 그 부분을 되게 중시합니다. 그 아까 말씀드린 기업 탐방이나 이런 부분들도 사실 그렇게 오너들과의 그리고 경영진과의 그 미팅을 굉장히 중시하고 이제 그 파운더들이 그 이제 창립자가 그 회사를 어떻게 이끌고 가고 그리고 처음 그 창립했을 때 예를 들어서 뭐 아마존도 있을 수 있었고요. 뭐 베이조스도 마찬가지지만 그분들이 그 가고자 했었던 그 추구했던 그 가치관을 계속 실현하고 있는지 그거를 계속 체크하는 걸 되게 중시한다고 해요. 그래서 그 부분이 사실은 성장 투자 그리고 장기 투자에 있어서 굉장히 많이 도움이 됐다 이렇게 말씀을 하시네요.
One quick way to sum this up. We invest in public companies and private companies like they're private companies. So if you think about a public company, just because it lists and has a share price, nothing else has changed. It's still about management. It's still about capital deployment. Just because a share price exists doesn't mean you have to look at the share price. So often people who get to know us, the shorthand is they say you invest in public companies as if they're private companies, and I think that's quite a good summary.
그렇게 투자하실 많은 회사들 중에서 사실 저희 이제 구독자들도 제일 많이 투자하는 회사 테슬라인데 그런 이제 관점에서 비춰봤을 때 테슬라의 일론 머스크에 대해서 좀 생각을 좀 얘기해 주신다면.
business right now.
So actually, Tesla's management has improved because Elon Musk has put in place a capable management team. So it's not really all about Elon anymore. But then that has a downside. So if he's not giving it his full attention, what happens next? Obviously, everyone will be aware of the huge package that he recently. We voted for that, incidentally, which may seem controversial, but if you look at the hurdles he has to pass, if he hits those hurdles, then he can have his huge pay packet. However, we don't own Tesla widely across the company anymore, and we actually sold it from this portfolio. We do own it in some other portfolios. But that's not because we don't like the firm. It's because we no longer see it as one of our best ideas in terms of upside from here. So car sales have slowed, actually reversed in some places, and I think that partly has to do with the politics of it. Now I think that will come back. I think Tesla will do, their car business will continue to grow in the long term, but it's kind of in the price. There's much more competition now from other EV makers. China probably has the best electric car. BYD make better cars much more cheaply than Tesla do. So that's become a challenge. To believe Tesla has very significant upside from here, you have to believe in the autonomous driving bit and the solar power business and possibly the robotics business. Now, all of those may become great businesses. And if Elon fully engages, they have more chance of becoming great businesses. But we just see that as having the probability of those working out is pretty low. So on a probability-weighted basis, a scenario-weighted basis, we now just think we can find better ideas that are more likely to do well from here. So Tesla's still got huge potential. The companies that Elon Musk has created, Tesla and SpaceX and others, he's a phenomenal powerhouse in company terms. So we're not negative, but we just, you know, so what should people do with Tesla? I mean, they need to make up their own mind, but it's not in our top 30 ideas anymore.
테슬라를 어떻게 편입했었는지에 대한 부분도 한번 들으시면 재밌을 것 같아요. Yeah. Included Tesla.
Yeah. So that's, well, this is a good question because this is about willingness to take risk, willingness to be wrong, willingness to embrace uncertainty. So we first became aware of Tesla's possibilities because actually we have a relationship with the Santa Fe Institute in California. And we talked to them about what's changing. And they told us about developments in battery technology. This is around 2007 or something. And they said it's becoming electric cars. Electric vehicles are becoming feasible at a reasonably mainstream price point. So we got very interested at that point because we could see a tailwind developing both environmentally. Actually, they're cheaper. There was just a lot of things we could see that if this works, this will fly. So that's why we got involved. But we could have been completely, you have to remember, we could have been completely wrong. It's interesting now because legislation isn't making much progress, but there was very positive legislation back then encouraging people to shift to EV cars, subsidies and everything else. So we could see what the upside would be. Tesla nearly failed on numerous occasions because creating scale manufacturing of vehicles is really hard. But we stuck with them through that, and eventually they got to where they might have. So we identified the opportunity. We could see what might happen. We assigned it a probability of, I don't know what it was, but it wasn't high. And it's one of the ones that paid off. The important thing to understand is that for every Tesla, there's a Q-cells, Q-cells being one of our worst investments ever. But that's okay. That's part and past. That's part of what we do. So we tell our clients about the bad investments as well as the good investments, because then they understand that the good ones are where all the returns come from. So we have made, in this strategy, we've made 120 times our money on Amazon and 20 times on Netflix, you know, et cetera. I've got a list somewhere. We have made big multiples of our money on many occasions, but we've also lost almost all our money on many occasions. But 120 times our money on Amazon pays for all the mistakes and still leaves quite a lot of gains for clients. So I think that's the important point here, is being willing to invest early in companies that have potentially great upside and accept quite a lot of them won't work. Remember, a lot of this is about people. So a very high number of the companies we invest in, it's not just that we abstractly see an opportunity which maybe they'll take advantage of. Companies are, the most successful companies are generally driven by really inspirational, almost obsessive individuals. And that's important. If you have a long investment horizon, the way that management acts and adapts and invests is maybe the single most important thing. That's what makes the difference between success and lack of success. So as we look at, you know, to take the Tesla example, if that hadn't been led by such an extraordinary character, it wouldn't have worked. So we have to take that, and, you know, but lots of these inspirational founders are quite eccentric, unusual people. But that's what it takes. If you're not eccentric and unusual, you're not going to try and change the world.
장기적으로 봐야 된다는 거는 알겠는데요. 뭐 지금부터 20년, 30년 후를 또 생각을 해야 되는데 미래에는 무엇이 중요해질 것 같은지, 어떤 것이 가치가 있는 건지, 그러니까 결국은 인류가 풀지 못한 숙제를 푸는 기업이 가치가 있다고 생각하는데 지금 보고 계시는 그 미래에 중요해지는 것들 무엇이라고 생각하시는지 이게 좀 궁금합니다.
Even we can't see that far ahead. I think it's the future is less knowable now than it has been for a very long time because of AI. So, you know, how will that? It's very hard to see. But I think there's two things that. So we need to be more adaptable than we have been in the past. That doesn't mean being short-term, but it does mean that we have to be more aware of where a well-established company could be. The competitive moat is now easier to tackle. The likelihood of a revolution which completely kills an existing company is much higher than it's been historically. So we need to be thinking about that. At the same time, we can try and look at so the sectors which will it maybe makes it harder to identify the winners in individual sectors, so we just have to be constantly alert for who seems to be adopting AI in a way that works for their business. So that doesn't mean that we know in 30 years' time, but one thing I'm certain of, there will be hugely valuable, successful drugs companies that are created through AI discovery of drugs. I think the transportation, how we think about transportation is going to completely change. You're not going to, there won't be cars with drivers. There might be cars that might all be, to be aviation. It might not even be, it'll be a mix, you know, but it will change dramatically. But there are other companies that, and I'm pretty confident that in 30 years' time, Hermes and Ferrari will still be luxury goods that everybody wants to show off. You know, you want to buy an Hermes bag. That's in 30 years' time, that will still be the case because they're such an amazing company and they manage their brand and they think in 30-year time frames. So there are some things that AI won't kill. In the main, it remains to be seen whether most of the value from AI accrues to the companies that are using it, and on a 30-year view, that will be every company, or the companies that are controlling it. And that would be those that have the big data sets, the obvious ones like Microsoft and Meta. Or will it be those that own the tech that trains the models? That would be NVIDIA. In 30 years' time, it might not be NVIDIA. So I'm not really answering your question, but there's a huge amount of uncertainty around AI will change almost everything. Not quite everything. But I don't think it means we have to have shorter horizons. It just means we have to think harder about competitive advantage and continual improvement within companies. What are they spending on R&D? And just probably be a little bit more ready to change our minds when unexpected things happen, because I think that will happen. We've hardly begun to discover what AI has made possible. So we just have to stay open-minded.
오늘 시간 함께 해주셔서 너무 감사드리고 저희 구독자들은 한국의 코리안 인베스터들이에요. 그래서 그 국내에 있는 도메스틱 스탁에도 투자를 많이 하지만 해외 투자 심지어 최근에 이제 환율이 이슈가 될 정도로 투자를 많이 하고 있는데 그런 투자자들에게 좀 이렇게 개인 투자자들에게 마지막으로 조언을 해주실 수 있다면 코리안 인베스터에게
I'll give you short-term advice. Do not trade the stock market. There might be one or two people who can do that, but almost everybody can't. Do you think you're the only one who is reading the news and trading? By the time you've done that, you're already too late. You cannot win by trying to be smarter or faster than the next guy about what you just read on Bloomberg or you saw on TV. All you will do is you will generate trading costs. Very often you'll tend to buy high, sell low. You know, this is what individuals do. So my strong advice is don't trade the markets. You have to be in the markets. Try and pick some good companies, do it yourself or get a fund manager to do it for you or buy an index fund. Whatever you think is the best way to do it. I would obviously argue just try and find the great companies and we can help you with that. Other people can buy an index fund. Just buy it and keep it. And keep adding if you can afford to save a bit more. Start early. Get into the market and save and don't sell. I've almost sold nothing in my entire life. I've made investments my whole life and I'm not retired yet. I've sold almost nothing. That's how you benefit from wealth creation. And it is about wealth creation. It's not about beating the other guy. It's not supposed to be a zero-sum game. But everybody thinks it's a zero-sum game and acts that way. So my advice is think about how is wealth created? It's created by companies finding newer and better ways to do things. So try to tap into that by investing in companies and just waiting for that to happen. If you're trying to get rich by beating the other guy, no, very few people can do that.
정리해서 말씀드리자면 사실 신형 자산용하고 베일리 기포드가 추구하는 이런 장기 투자는 도덕적인 이념이나 굉장히 송구한 뭐 그런 정신은 아닙니다. 막연한 기다림이 아니라고 보시면 될 것 같아요. 이제 장기 투자를 함으로써 불필요한 그런 매매 비용이나 변동성 위험을 사실은 통계적으로 좀 제거를 할 수 있고요. 그 변동성이 없다는 게 아니죠. 주식적인 사실 변동성을 어느 정도는 환영을 해야 됩니다. 근데 장기 투자를 함으로써 장기 투자를 한 그 기간을 넓혀보면은 결국 변동성이 좀 제거가 되는 거죠. 그렇게 해서 남들이 감내하지 못하는 지금 계속 나왔던 시간이라는 투자 기간이라는 그 시간의 가치를 최대한 누려야 된다라는 말씀을 하시는 것 같아요. 그리고 저희 신형자산운용도 그 부분을 굉장히 공감하고 있고요. 저희도 뭐 한국에서 30년 지금 가치주 운용하고 배당주 운용을 해왔지만 그런 불확실한 시간을 감내하는 프리미엄으로 어찌 보면은 자본 수익을 얻고 배당 수익을 얻는 그런 부분이 발생을 했기 때문에 저희는 이런 이제 막연히 기다리는 게 아닌 장기 투자가 이런 시간에 투자하는 부분이 가장 과학적인 투자 전략이다라고 말씀드릴 수 있을 것 같습니다.
알겠습니다. 네. 아주 특별한 시간이었는데요. 아마 그 굉장히 깊이 있는 생각을 하실 수 있지 않았을까. 장기 투자라는 것이 그냥 우리가 그냥 사놓고 그냥 기다리는 것이 아니라 어떤 자세를 가져야지 장기 투자를 할 수 있고 성공한 투자를 할 수 있는지에 대한 고민을 할 수 있는 좋은 시간이었던 것 같고요. 베일리 기포드와 신형자산 운용도 계속해서 좋은 협업 관계와 앞으로 더 많은 성장을 이뤄나가시길 기대하는 마음을 가지고 저희는 여기서 마무리하도록 하겠습니다. 감사합니다.
고맙습니다.